Welcome. You're listening to the Grow Ortho Podcast, presented by Hip Creative. This podcast is dedicated to those who want to stand strong in their market and be leaders in their community. Now onto the show with your host, Luke Infinger.
Mr. Chris Benson, thank you so much for taking the time to speak today. Really appreciate it. Why don't you just, introduce yourself and tell our listeners or viewers just a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again for having me on. And I'm an observer of the orthodontic specialty space, I guess is the most general way to describe me, since 1988. So what is that, 33 years almost, been in this space. I rocked out of the practice management cradle in Atlanta, spent 17 plus years there, did a little bit of consulting in the imaging digital movement around 2000. And then for the last 20 years, not quite 20 years, have been in Greensboro, North Carolina, doing valuations, transitions, and recruiting work, also getting to know the DSO space. And we kind of are known or deliver a lot of information about which direction we think the trends are headed in the orthodontic specialty, how fast they're going, and try to feed that back to the specialty to give them some help. So love orthodontics, congratulations on the great company and clientele that you've built in a short amount of time. It's impressive.
Thank you for that introduction as well. So again, just with my experience, been doing this for about 7 years, not very long in the grand scheme, but from what I've seen, there's more attention around orthodontics than ever before, you know, with Smile Direct Club, Align, Invisalign, private equity, and as well, just orthodontist getting much more savvy with marketing as well. It seems like the landscape is a lot different than 10, 15 years ago. So just your advice, how should orthodontists prepare for the next 3 to 5 years?
It's a great question, I think, with several kind of angles or approaches. Yeah. And there's not a one size that fits all, but we've moved in orthodontics from a very professional relationship, referral centric way to operate to a consumer centric way to operate. And so people my age that have been doing this for a while were not natives, on the computer. Computers came after we even started our practices. Mm-hmm. And we've learned a lot along the way, and marketing is a relatively new term in orthodontics. I mean, you look at the last 90 years in orthodontics, we've only used this term marketing for 20 of them, the last 20. And it was kind of taboo in medicine and dentistry. But now, in order to be successful, and increasingly so, you're going to have to speak to the consumer. And that's going to mean doing that digitally and in a voice that they want to be communicated with. And so there's an expertise, and I suspect your company is, got the leading practices in the country, in the larger practices in the country, because you've dialed that in pretty tight. Most orthodontists don't realize how much of a skill set that is, but the number one of the top issues, maybe it's not number one, but one of those very top issues, is you got to be able to speak to the consumer to make the phone ring. And that's a skill set that can be learned. It can be purchased, if you will, but it has to be a total integration of the entire team and in the community. So that's one. The second thing is you're gonna have to treat people differently. We believe, we're moving from 24, months to a fewer number of months. We're moving from 24 appointments to a fewer number of appointments. There's a lot of debate about what is the sweet spot, what is the number. But the consumer, we learned with the pandemic for sure, is very comfortable not seeing the orthodontist, not coming to the office, and would like an alternative way. And SDC and the direct-to-consumer companies have taught us that. So I think the two biggest things I would say are you've got to treat differently and more digitally to be efficient, and you've got to speak with the consumer. And if you do those two things well, fundamentally, the balance sheet in the P&L will also rearrange itself, because you're going to spend money in different areas that you didn't in the past. So that's the third critical piece that people don't go there as fast as they should because they think it's not as profitable as perhaps the old style bracket referral centric practice.
Yeah, it's interesting with what we see, even in terms of the patient experience, really just thinking that through and dialing it in as much as possible. We even have a doctor, not that I would suggest this to anybody, but he's running doctorless consults. And so it's the TC, meeting, greeting the person and walking them through the process. And for that practice, it works really well. But just in terms of optimizing, trying things, the doctor spending maybe less time in the TC room, as well as you mentioned, technology, and just seeing more and more people virtually. We work with Dr. Keith Dressler, who founded Rhinogram, and just using Rhinogram to be able to continue to deliver a great experience. Most people my age really place a lot of weight on, the experience and convenience as that part of the experience. So it's very interesting what's happening.
Full disclosure, I've known Keith for a long time in my career and was so impressed with Rhinogram and just this whole concept of teledentistry, telehealth, that I've been asked to be part of a number of technology companies over the last probably five years or so, but made a personal investment in Rhinogram because I believe in that concept. And I think we'll see more and more of that as an example. So, I'm glad you brought it up. I think it's actually going to have more legs on the healthcare side than it does in the dental side, but that's where it gets started.
Yeah. He's, I was just visiting him a few days ago, again, really good friend, and we've just become close and great guy, really smart guy. So what do you think worries orthodontists?
Well, I think they're worried that the specialty is going to be taken over by corporate. I think they're worried that the specialty is going to be taken over by direct to consumer. And for the last 30 years, they worried that the general dentists were going to take over their specialty. I think all of those have an element of truth to them, but only an element of truth, in that for the foreseeable future into the generations ahead, there will always be room for the historic cottage, hang a shingle, or solo and small group practitioner that wants to go to market. And they'll be very successful if they learn to talk to the consumer, do it digitally, and use efficient technology. So that means a lot of things. But there's a lot of fear in the orthodontic specialty right now. And it's mostly the fear of being eliminated in the chain and having other people kind of taking over their business. But I think you can have both, because we also have a big change in who our doctors are now. I mean, generationally, today, 15% of the residents that graduate want to own or buy or start a practice. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that was 85%. That is phenomenal change, but most of that is generational, and we just are operating differently. And thankfully, the corporates in the direct to consumer are forcing some change, expanding the market, more opportunities, and it's all going to be okay. You just have to kind of pick your spot, be a little sharper with your pencil, but a lot of fear in the specialty right now that I think is not fully merited.
Yeah, I would agree. Obviously, I talk to a lot of practice owners and I hear that worry come across in a lot of different ways. What we see is exactly what you said, is long as people can adapt and be open to doing things differently, speaking directly to the consumer, utilizing technology, whether it be the internet or something like Rhinogram, whatever that may be, dental monitoring, there's so much opportunity because so much more attention has been drawn to orthodontics with larger companies, as well as just like I mentioned before, orthodontic marketing. So many more orthodontists are doing great marketing themselves. So there's so much more attention within orthodontic treatment. So I really believe what you said as well. What do patients care about most?
I think, again, it's an array of answers, but they do care most about, I think, convenience and cost. Mm-hmm. They care less about outcomes after the social six than orthodontists would like to believe. But, you know, I think they want a small direct club kind of price and efficient modality where I don't have to come in and take work off or bring my kids in or whatever. But they do like the expertise of a specialist. And so they kind of want their cake and want to eat it too. The challenge for the specialty is to draw that distinction and say, you can have efficiency. It is affordable. Here's how, and here's why we're better, different, bigger, better, faster, stronger than this other option. And the consumer doesn't see that. The lines haven't been drawn very well for the consumer. They see a general dentist, a pediatric dentist, a direct to consumer company as similar to an orthodontist. So that's part of the marketing challenge, the educational challenge that we have, and the practices that do that well and are authentic and honest and drive technology to help them be efficient and convenient and cost effective, we're going to win.
Yeah, agreed. It's interesting. I finally decided to get orthodontic treatment again as an adult. And, you know, if you think back 10, 15 years ago, really before Invisalign really took off, I would have never thought about going back as an adult to get orthodontic treatment. Probably most adults wouldn't. But now with Invisalign, it's so easy. And so many orthodontists sometimes worry about seeing the patient right then in the moment, getting things right, making sure that they, you know, wear their retainer for life, all these things. But we don't really care about that much, you know, at least I didn't. And I don't think a lot of young adults did. However, knowing that I can go back in and get care now and that it's easy, affordable, maybe I can even send in pictures, that's huge. And so the young adult market, how do you see that being like in terms of percentages? What type of opportunity is there? And the reason I ask is most orthodontists focus on young kids, and obviously we know why, but is there just as much opportunity with adults?
Well, that's where all the growth has been in the last decade. And let me kind of, before I answer your question, kind of make a comment on top of your experience.
Yeah.
You know, for years, the consultants and the orthodontists have decided that, you know, we used to have 20, 30 years ago, retention for life was kind of the policy. We were all about relationships. And when you're home from school, come in and see me. When you're back home to see your parents, come in to see me. We stopped doing that because from an efficiency standpoint, we had these chairs filling up in our schedule with non-revenue producing patients. And so right now it's, let's get finished, let's get debonded, we'll do active retention for 6 months and you're done. Now what we can do, and this was really accelerated, I think, through the pandemic, is, you know, we can do these retention visits virtually. We can deploy our team differently. And if we begin to establish lifetime relationships with our patients and let them know that, you know, gravity happens, growth happens, aging happens, your teeth are gonna move, that we're here, this practice is here for you, not only when you're 13, but when you're 28, when you're 48, when you're 60, you can come in for tune-ups just like your car gets a tune-up forever. And we're here for you. Call us anytime. We'll call you every X, you know, frequency of time. And I think a marketing policy of a patient for life, it needs to be reinstalled in the orthodontic ethos, and that we'll be able to keep track of a lot of these people. You know, practitioners that, you know, have busy practices that treat in excess of 10,000 patients a year. I mean, if you had 200 or 300 of those coming back every year for tune-ups at $3,000 a piece, that's a beautiful thing. And so we need to think of our practices differently. To your question, you know, why don't we attract that audience? Because we don't speak to them. They don't think we're an option. Just as you said, you didn't think you'd go back. You know, you had Invisalign, but if you went back, the answer you would get with most orthodontists still today in the country is, you know what, you need a full phase case. I can do it in Invisalign, but it's $6,000. That's kind of uninteresting to you. Then, you know what, let's do a tune-up, and we can do that in 6 months with Invisalign for $3,000. You know, all of a sudden, you look a whole lot, you're at a specialist, and you look a whole lot more like an SDC, you know, experience, but you're getting the specialist. The specialists think they can't make money doing that. They don't have a way to do that. And so we're going to have to mature in that area, develop the technologies, you know, either with aligner companies or printing our own or whatever. But once we get that wired down tighter, that will be a product line, if you will, is, you know, small, minor tooth movement cases on young adults and older adults.
Yeah, agreed. Great. Thanks for that. This comes up a lot, and I just heard it a few days ago as well. And bad patients, especially in regards to SDC. You know, I get asked all the time, should we try and compete with them? How can we chip away at that? Again, kind of to go back to worry, but a lot of orthodontists may have the mindset that, well, SDC only attracts bad patients. But then I talk to other orthodontists and they'll get SDC patients in the chair to fix things and do it right. And so just maybe a few thoughts on that. Does SDC only attract, or any other DIYers, bad patients? I really like Dr. Fishbein's approaches. If the person has a pulse and teeth, they're a great patient, you know, or could be. So just your two cents on that.
Yeah. You know, I think it's a knee-jerk reaction in the main. I think all practices have bad patients.
Sure.
And so forth. I mean, the notion that people that sign up for SDC are less than is just not true. There was actually an article published, I believe, in the JCO, a strong clinical magazine, on FICO scores of SDC patients, and they're amazingly high.
Wow.
And when you really look at the array of who's showing up and who's signing up for that product, it's people, young adults, who really want efficiency and have really difficult times managing their schedule. Who's that? Teachers, policemen, firemen, engineers, first responders, medical professionals. They just don't want to take the time to get off work to come see you, and they want to look better. And a lot of them are young adults because we're getting married later. They just want to look more attractive. There's been a lot of talk of the Zoom effect because of the pandemic, of people just seeing themselves and going, wow, I really look like that. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get that fixed. And so, you know, the sad truth is orthodontists are stiff arming those patients because they don't think they're profitable. And they think that if they go to SDC, that's a patient I didn't want anyway. Absolutely not the truth. There's a lot of feeling about the, you know, Invisalign has a concierge center where actually people who hit their website are contacted by an Invisalign employee and then try to push to an Invisalign provider. People say the same thing. Oh, those are terrible patients. Well, yeah, some of them are. Some of them don't have a dentist. Some of them haven't seen a dentist in a long time. And you got to have a way to sift those people out. You can do that with technology. You can do that a lot of ways. But we've got to get over that arrogance and you know, to grow our businesses. There's tremendous growth because it's not just treating 67% of the kids that are born in North America anymore. It's treating them initially and then doing tune-ups through the course of their life. And that's going to expand orthodontic market. And practices that do that will thrive. And practices that don't, I think, will have a very steep hill to climb over the next 20 years.
What are some of the top practices doing that maybe others aren't, that you've identified and seen over the past couple of years?
I think it's been consistent to answer that question for me in the last 30 years. I mean,
oh wow,
practitioners, or orthodontists particularly, are enormously bright, enormous independent thinkers. But they are trained as scientists, and they approach problems with the scientific method. And they are historically, as a group, very poor delegators. And so there's this notion that I can do it better myself. We're small businesses, so we don't have time to do a whole lot of training and have systems in place and so forth. But the very best practices my entire career that were the top elite 5% practices all employed consultants. And when you look at, okay, let's look at the population of 9,000 orthodontists, give or take, over the last 30 years, graduating about as many as we retire every year, so a fairly constant number. How many of those employed consultants? Less than 20% is the data. And so, you know, if less than 20% employ consultants, those 80% that don't, you know, make the middle and the bottom, the others make the very elite in the top. And so that's kind of how it goes, that 80-20 rule. And it just blows my mind that when you ask an orthodontist why they don't use consultants, they don't trust them, they're too expensive, they don't have time, they don't know who to pick, you know, they have this failure to launch syndrome. What if I pick the wrong one and spend all this money? But, you know, you see in your business, the people that hire you do better. The people that hire a consultant, and they're in an array. They're in marketing, they're in TC training, they're in reading your P&L. There's lots of different ones. We think you should always be engaged with a consultant, and it's the best money you can spend. So we tell young orthodontists, that's what we see with the groups that really excel at the highest level in orthodontics. And I think that's what you're seeing too, that the list of clients that I understand that you work with, I know many, many of them, and they all use consultants, and I've had the opportunity to get to know them, learn from them, and them from me. But that's the secret sauce. And if you do that, you'll do better.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that I've noticed too, working with practices like that, I think that the top practices in the country, as well as even down to startups, or maybe even some that have been stuck for a number of years, is the teams and the organizational charts that they have. From what I can see, and you know, being a business owner, you always want to run as lean as possible, but sometimes that's not what's best for growth. And a lot of times within practices, I see one person doing like 10 different roles, and it's just not scalable. You know, a lot of times those team members are burnout, things like that. And so a lot of the practices that I see growing really fast, they have empowered someone to start to look at the team and the org chart and make sure that it's done strategically. People are brought on even into specialized roles like a marketing coordinator or an outreach coordinator, financial coordinator, TC, and obviously not letting them or having in their job description that they're doing a billion other things, more so focused. I've seen that be tremendous for practices as well.
Yeah, I think managing growth is a trick. It's a skill, actually. It's a leadership skill. It's a, you know, primarily. When you look at the, of all the practices in the country that are solo owned, which is about 5,700, that solo practitioner in the center of the road is doing 1.25 million with six people. And so this is 210,000 of revenue per FTE, and it doesn't really have an org chart. But when you get to 2 million, 3 million, 4 million, which is where people are going to go in the digital world, you're going to have one employee every $300,000 in revenue at the most efficient levels. And you're going to have more employees, 10, 12, 14, you know, 20 employees. And you're going to have levels of management and allow people to be empowered to make decisions and let them fail. You know, we learn that from the best business people everywhere. Make them accountable to their job. Coach them when they make mistake. Don't beat them up when they fail, and you know, help them get back on their feet. If they can't, you get rid of them. But small business people are terrible about holding on to people too long. And to your point of, you know, letting the superstar do everything, you see it in churches, you see it in business, you see it in volunteer organizations. When you get a superstar, they just get fried because they're asked to do everything because they're so good. Can't do that in business. And so you've got to bring a team along, and we don't naturally have that skill set as orthodontists.
Last question. What's the one thing, if you could only impart one thing to orthodontist, what's that one thing that they should know more than anything else?
leadership is a learned skill and the most important skill for growth, if you want growth. If you don't care about growth, you don't have to be a great leader. But if you want to grow in an environment that today is very difficult to grow in, you have to invest in yourself on the leadership side. That means you have to have a vision for what your practice looks like. You need to, that's a lot of thought. You need to be able to see it. And then you have to be able to learn to transfer what's in your head to your people, empower them to present that vision in every encounter they have in your business, and then give them feedback and they give you feedback. But that's the skill set that we lack the most, in my opinion, in order to grow. If you don't want to grow, you can have a million to practice anywhere, I think. It's not hard. It's that hard. But if you want to grow bigger than that, it takes real leadership.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for spending some time with me today. If anyone has questions, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you and your company?
Yeah, let's just say digitally. We've got a website, bensoncoppel.com. You can look us up and Google us. We're all over the place. We've got a lot of content that we publish and that we share. And call our office. I do informal calls all day long, every day when I'm in the office, and they're gratis. So we get to know each other. We get to discuss kind of where you are, what you're thinking. If there's a work product that comes out of that, great. If there's not, it's just a good conversation and we're happy to do it. And that's what's made us successful. That's probably that last element that everybody's looking for is it's the patient experience and all that stuff. That's your job. I think, a good leader has to paint what that's going to look like first and then hire you to make it happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to learn more about improving your healthcare marketing, day-to-day operations, and standing strong in your market, send us an email at hello@hipcreativeinc.com. That's hello@hipcreativeinc.com. Or jump over to our website at hip.agency.